coming to you from deep inside the vaults of the Holmes Archive of Electronic Music. I am Tom Holmes, your curator and guide to vintage electronic music and audio experimentation. This episode, first recordings of the Moog Modular Synthesizer. In my project to archive every early recording of the Moog Modular Synthesizer, I am often asked to name the very first recordings. So I thought it would be worthwhile to document what I've discovered while archiving these recordings. My list originally appeared a few years back in my blog for the Bob Moog Foundation, and I have since slightly updated it due to one additional discovery. My list of the first 10 commercial recordings of the Moog Modular Synthesizer includes 45 RPM singles and long-playing albums, whichever came first. I have corroborated the release dates using multiple sources, including one or more trade publications from the time, the U.S. Copyright Office, and personal contacts with the artists, producers, and engineers themselves. I do not use dates found in Wikipedia. Being on this list means that a record was sold in retail stores and had the potential of widely influencing the sound of the time. This collection does not include non-commercial releases such as broadcast library records, because those were not widely heard or available in retail stores. The first recordings of the Moog began to appear in May of 1967. This list will take us through December 1967, when you could still count the number of Moog records on 10 fingers. As you might expect, something as new as a synthesizer and as complicated as the Moog left many artists baffled. Sometimes you have to be a sound detective to pick up the sound of the Moog on a record. Not all Moog performances are credited on the liner notes. Fortunately, I had the opportunity to use a Moog modular for several years in the early 1970s in the Electronic Music Lab of Temple University. This gives me some familiarity with what the Moog could do and the sounds that it could make. But even then, I am careful not to attribute a sound to a Moog that couldn't more easily be produced using something else, especially if that something else was a part of the recording session. Remember that the Moog was new at the time, and as Bob Moog said, nobody knew exactly how to use it in popular music. Yet there were some early practices that many artists repeated. These included, you bury the Moog in a mix of many instruments, using it primarily for accents and effects. Or you use the Moog to modulate other sounds, making the familiar unfamiliar. Or perhaps you ramp up the bottom of a track by using the famous Moog bass sound as a bed underneath the other instruments. Or you bring the Moog to the forefront as an instrument on its own, writing tunes expressly for its unique tonalities. Because the Moog was monophonic, anything that sounds like a chord is probably not a Moog unless some serious multitracking was done, a la Wendy Carlos in the following year. We will hear examples of all of these in the first 10 Moog recordings. Let's begin the countdown of the first 10 Moog records of all time. Number 10 is The Savers, a single by Jean-Jacques Perry and Gershon Kingsley, released on December 9th, 1967. Thank you. That was The Savers from Perry and Kingsley, released as a single. The Moog programming was done by Gershon Kingsley and Jean-Jacques Perry. Perry also played the ondioline on this recording. This track showcases the Moog as an instrument in and of itself, using multi-tracking to form harmonies and other tape effects that they had already mastered. Perry would go on to a long career in pop music and is mostly associated with the ondioline, a compact organ. Kingsley recorded the tune Popcorn in 1970, which became one of the most covered Moog hits of all time. Number 9 is Extended Voices by Toshi Ishinagi, a track of electronic music from November 18, 1967.
Thank you.
The complete name of that piece by Toshi Ishinagi is Extended Voices for Voices with Moog Synthesizer and Buchla Associates Modular System. This was part of a collection of experimental voice works. Ishinagi most likely recorded the taped portions of this work in 1967 at the Brandeis Electroacoustic Music Studio located in Waltham, Massachusetts. The studio was known to have had a Buchla system and a Moog modular system. Coming in at number 8 is Daily Nightly by the Monkees from an album released on November 11th, 1967. That was Daily Nightly by the Monkees from the album Pisces, Aquarius, Capricorn, and Jones, Limited. It featured Mickey Dolenz and Paul Beaver on Moog. Although not literally the first rock record to feature a Moog, this Monkees album is probably the most often cited example of an early Moog because so many people heard it. The record is a lot of fun because the Monkees succeeded in using some of the most spacey sounds they could conjure within the context of a pop song. Next is song number 7, Tune In, Turn On by Hal Blaine, released on September 30th, 1967. We'll be right back. That was Tune In, Turn On by Hal Blaine from the album Psychedelic Percussion. For this record, the Moog is listed as the Beaver Electronic Instrument and Paul Beaver credited with electronic devices. The album includes 12 instrumental tracks featuring Blaine's drumming and an exotic list of featured instruments, from gongs and bird calls to train whistles and sub-bass canary. The Moog has a role on every track. Number 6 is Flash Bam Pow by The Electric Flag, released on September 9th, 1967. That was Flash Bam Pow by The Electric Flag from the soundtrack for the movie The Trip. The Electric Flag was a Los Angeles-based rock group led by Mike Bloomfield on guitar, and they were very interested in the Moog synthesizer and recruited Paul Beaver to provide electronic sound effects on several tracks for this movie. In this case, you can hear the Moog primarily during the opening of the song and the closing of the song. By March of 1968, they also released an album of their own with Beaver on Moog as a member of the band. Number 5 is Strange Days by The Doors, released on September 7th, 1967.
Strange.
That was Strange Days by The Doors, from the album that was also called Strange Days. The Moog programmer was Paul Beaver. Ray Manzarek, keyboardist of The Doors, recounted in his own book the recording session with Paul Beaver that resulted in this one track on The Doors album. Beaver sat down with the group and the Moog synthesizer and was demonstrating an endless variety of Moog sounds to the band. Apparently, they had trouble keeping up with him. This wasn't the most focused process. In the end, the Moog modular played only a minor role on this album, that of modulating the voice of Jim Morrison on the song Strange Days. Manzarek recalled that Morrison would trigger the modulating with the keyboard as he sang every word. Number 4 is Six Dreams by The Seeds, released on June 24th, 1967. That was Six Dreams by The Seeds, released as a single. That opening thunderstorm sound is an actual recording of a thunderstorm, but it quickly morphs into that windy sound that ebbs and flows throughout much of the rest of the song. That is what I believe is the Moog sound. There is a simple Moog patch that modifies the amplitude and attack characteristics of white noise to create this undulating effect. A very common Moog technique. Although no credit is given, I suspect that Paul Beaver provided this effect because the album was recorded in Hollywood, a frequent stopover for Beaver and Krause. Now for number 3 in our list of first Moog recordings, Garnett by Emil Richards, released in June 1967. That was Garnett by Emil Richards from his album Stones. The Moog programmer was, again, Paul Beaver. Richards is another well-known Los Angeles session musician. He told me that, quote, Beaver assisted as programmer for these sessions. I played the synthesizer and all mallet instruments on all 12 tracks, unquote. This is the first commercial recording to credit the Moog synthesizer by name. This concept album revolved around 12 birthstones. There's a lot of Moog going on in these tracks, and the way in which they are played in rhythm to the mallet instruments is because Richards was playing the synthesizer. You also hear the Moog prominently as an accompaniment to what sounds like ring-modulated mallet instruments. I can't say for sure if the ring modulation came from the Moog, although a Bode brand ring modulator was available from Moog at the time. Number two is Love In by Hal Blaine, released on June 3rd, 1967. Love In, a single by Hal Blaine from the soon-to-be-released album Psychedelic Percussion. The Moog programmer in this case, again, Paul Beaver. This is a single from Blaine's trippy psychedelic percussion album, a case where the single achieves date priority over the album from which it was taken. This is the first 45 RPM single released to feature a Moog. Blaine is the legendary session drummer who played for everyone from the Beach Boys to Frank Sinatra and the Carpenters. Hal Blaine already knew Paul Beaver as a fellow session musician. On Love In, Blaine playing drums was accompanied by Emil Richards on mallet instruments, and the ethereal Moog sound played for effect in the background, mostly in the second half of the song. Number one is from the Zodiac Cosmic Sounds. The track is Aquarius, The Lover of Life by Mort Garson. It was released on May 20th, 1967.
Dreams may decay into indigo dust that covers Aquarius, and still the voice will say, love. Go, be, but forget no one. Weak, strong, all belong. Friendly opal light of Uranus, all men can blend, yet still be what they are.
We heard Aquarius, the Lover of Life. The Moog programmer in this case was Paul Beaver. Mort Garson gets the honor for releasing the first official album to feature a Moog modular synthesizer. And deservedly so, because it was his recording session for the album, The Zodiac Cosmic Sounds, that brought together Moog musician Paul Beaver with musicians including Hal Blaine and Emil Richards, who would go on to produce three of the other records in this top 10 list. This was a famous studio session for which composer and arranger Mort Garson and producer Alex Hasselev called in a bevy of session musicians to create a musical, mind-bending trek through the astrological signs. Narrated by Cyrus Faryar, the session was filled with some of the most famous session players of the time. Emil Richards on exotic percussion, Bud Shank on bass flute, Hal Blaine on drums, Carol Kay on bass guitar, Mike Melvoin on keyboards, and Paul Beaver credited with electronic instruments. Must be played in the dark are the instructions printed in purple on the back of the album cover. This was not only the first commercial release of a record featuring the Moog, but also the first to chart. The arrangements are pretty brilliant, and it really is difficult at times to separate the Moog from the other instruments sprinkled over this album, such as the harpsichord, sitar, organ, and tablas. In Aquarius, the Moog doesn't enter until the second half of the song in the form of reverberating beeps. Mort Garson went on to become a terrific Moog producer and programmer himself, creating some of the most beloved Moog albums of all time. These included an audacious follow-up to the Zodiac Cosmic Sounds, consisting of 12 individual albums, one per astrological sign, released by A&M in 1969. For more information about the history of the Moog modular synthesizer, check out my book, Electronic and Experimental Music, 6th edition, published in 2020 by Routledge. Now for the archive mix, in which I play two additional tracks at the same time to see what happens. I will continue with the Moog theme. The first track is Tillicum, the theme from the Canadian TV show Here Come the 70s, and the track is by Syrinx from 1970, and it features John Mills Cockle on Moog. The second track is a bit of an outlier. It is the track Komarovsky and Laura's Rendezvous from the soundtrack to Dr. Zhivago. The music is by Maurice Jarre, and this is an excerpt. This soundtrack from 1965 is rumored to have included an early Moog, but audible evidence is really scarce. I think I may have found an example in the deep bass midway through this cut. Thank you. All of the music heard on this podcast, unless otherwise indicated, comes from the Holmes Archive of Electronic Music, a curated collection of vintage vinyl recordings. All crackles, surface noise, and other imperfections are purely intentional. All intro, outro, and other incidental music is by Tom Holmes. For a complete playlist, go to theholmesarchive.podbean.com. So long from deep inside, the Holmes Archive of Electronic Music.